Dr. Khan is substituting for the Megan who's on your program.
Respected Chairperson, distinguished gathering, a very good afternoon. I'm here today to share with you experience with the hospital management success during an extreme diarrheal disease outbreak at ICU River Hospital in 2007. Special thanks to Megan Cohen, who has contributed greatly in every step. No relationships to disclose. Coping with floods, a ruthless disaster, everything submerged in presumably contaminated water, normal health systems disrupted, immediate threat to public health requires massive assistance and support. Some information: one of the worst monsoon season in South Asia in recent years caused flooding last year. There was contaminated water supply here, there, and everywhere. Over 14 million people got displaced. A huge number of them fled to the capital city of Dhaka for survival, in daytime working as daily laborers under the scorching heat, and at the night ending as street dwellers or residing in very crowded slums. Bottom line, presumably consuming a lot of contaminated water and also contaminated food along with poor sanitation. We had an unprecedented surge in the number of patient visits at the Dhaka Hospital with a record number of 1,045 on August 14th. This graph shows you the red line numbers in 2007 and blue in 2006. We receive every day on an average 250 to 300 patients, and with two peaks, one pre-monsoon, April-May, and one post-monsoon, August-September. But in 2007, the post-monsoon started a little bit early, towards the later part of July, and continued until the later part of October. And as you can see, numbers greatly outnumbered those of 2006, and the maximum was, as I said, in August 14. Some important findings. Around 50,000 patients visited us from July through September. 34% had culture confirmed cholera. 84% of the cholera patients had severe dehydration, and 93% of these severely dehydrated patients required intravenous fluids for their management. The isolation of pathogens during this period, Vibrio cholera 01 and not 0139, constituted over 5 years around 44%, with Inaba and Ogawa serotype sharing the burden. And in children, rotavirus was the commonest less than 5 years around 30.2%. All these informations come from the Diarrheal Disease Surveillance System established in 1979, which systematically samples 2% of all patients. That is, every 50th patient's stool is examined. Objectives: determine etiology of diarrhea and monitor changes. Detect emergence of new pathogens and re-emergence of conventional pathogens. Determine antimicrobial susceptibility of major enteric pathogens and monitor changes. Enteric pathogen screen: bacteria, rotavirus, parasites, and helminths. Antimicrobial therapy: until July 2007, doxycycline was the first line of therapy to treat cholera patients. We have a continuous monitoring process which goes on in the hospital as well as in the laboratory sciences division. Linking up the two, the clinical researchers can always choose the appropriate antibiotic. And from August 2007, the antibiotic was changed to azithromycin because of poor clinical response with doxycycline. Keys to ICD-DRB success: human factors, technical, knowledge, experience of over 40 years, skills, quick assessment, rapid initiation of IV, prudent use of ORS, and effective assessment of fluid balance, efficient use of other therapies. Humane, positive, helping attitude, self-esteem, confidence, can-do qualities, cooperation among various staff categories, and team spirit. This experience has a remarkable contribution in Gomaza in 1994 when there was a cholera outbreak, and when the Rwandan staff managed the patients by themselves, the mortality rate was 14.5%. Why? Because there were long lines of patients waiting for treatment. No use of ORS, slow rehydration, use of inappropriate size needles, untrained, inexperienced staff. But when an Israeli army group intervened, the mortality came down to 2.3%. And when an ICDDRB group joined the Israeli army group, the mortality came down to 0.6%. And ladies and gentlemen, over the years, with further experience and with more of innovative techniques, last year the mortality from only diarrheal disease was 0%. The management of staff by category at Dhaka Hospital on a regular basis, from doctors to volunteers, we have around 64 every 8 hours working. But as you can see during the floods, it was almost triple. Basically, when the patient number goes over 300 for every 50 patients, we recruit 5 additional 8 hourly, and in crises like last year, it was even more depending on circumstances. And the consumption of the rice warriors, you can well see in year 2007, it was almost double than that of year 2006 from July through November. The low-tech, high-output, we have the collapsible cholera cots, which are covered with the oilcloths and with a hole in the center, bucket placed in the bottom. Can you imagine a patient suffering from acute watery diarrhea, lying on diarrhea stool, cannot move due to weakness to go to the toilet? So here, the stool passes discreetly into the bucket. It facilitates clinical diagnosis, helps us to monitor the stool output and to contribute to the intake output chart, and also safe disposal of the excreta without any smell in the hospital. We have the rice-based oral rehydration solution, an in-house kitchen facility, preparation of large quantities round the clock, and quick, efficient delivery to patients. These stools in the bucket gives us the quick clinical decision-making tools, naked eye examination. You see the rice watery cholera stool, the typical rotavirus stool, and the dysentric stool. Treating severe dehydration, the skin pinch method goes down very slowly, WHO and also modification of Dhaka method. Infusion bags and lines above beds in place waiting for use. Insertion of up to 4 IV channels for a single patient depending on clinical severity. Bowl under each bed for collecting vomiters of cholera patients by an attendant. Planning, procurement, and distribution, a part of adaptive crisis management. You can see the rice warriors, the saline, and everything, the trays with all the accessories and the teams all ready in place. A part of adaptive crisis management. We did not wait for today evening to see what will happen tomorrow. The patient number will go high or low, but we did construct a safety net so that we could admit all and in any area of ICDRB which was accessible for us. And in the bottom picture, these cots were copied by Medical Science Frontier and international NGO who were successful in the later part of the outbreak to see 300 to 400 patients per day in collaboration with ICDRB. The support of nursing staff and attendants who are the frontliners, you can see in the pictures, the attendants, the security guards, the nursing staff, these people putting them in the bed, and in the glimpse of an eye, the shock patients, they are receiving 3 to 4 IV channels and then onwards. Waiver of user fees. We had a user fee at the registration desk, but it was an executive decision to waive the user fees during the crisis period, which in addition to improved patient flow, allowed for immediate patient care and helped the very poor also. Above picture, before waiver, bottom picture, after the waiver, you can see more cleaner, no clogging of patients, and one-way road. So the emergency block. Every hospital has an emergency, maybe with a couple of beds. But with onrushes of several patients in a minute or in a couple of minutes coming in with shock, one patient having a couple of attendants, one running for the patient, another for paying fees, another for changing of money, etc., this emergency block tremendously helped to produce one-way traffic, reduce clock, ready stock of essential supplies, and no reduction of paperwork, waiver of registration fees, constant supervision, doctors 24 hours a day, and establishment IV line within glimpse of an eye. And after partial rehydration, we were removing the patient to the better wards so that the emergency beds were kept empty for the remaining coming in patients. The gradual recovery. You can see in one picture a child being fed rice warriors while IV saline is being given through one bag. Another hook is still there for another IV if required. Another bag, you can see buckets containing rice warriors. And we were always logistically one step ahead, which is very important for effective planning. And in the picture, our executive director himself in the floor with the entire team, all the unit heads, the head of nursing, nursing officer, the hospital manager, the security head, and the senior researchers and the scientists lead the research work to contribute and all work in a united platform to combat the epidemic. The breastfeeding continued. The volunteer you can see giving the ORS to the mother while the mother allowing the baby to breastfeed. Cleanliness. Keeping the patient care space clean is of paramount importance, not only for aesthetic reasons, but also for safety of patients and their attendants and the hospital staff alike. Considering the fact that around 60% of patients presented with severe dehydration and 34% had cholera, culture confirmed cholera, assuming that 30% of patients would have died without such sort of measures, we assume that the hospital saved an estimated 13,000 lives during this period. None of the patients died due to dehydrating diarrhea alone. A mother with a child with a packet of ORS and a strip of zinc. Zinc 20 mg per day to be given for 10 days as per WHO UNICEF recommendations from 6 months to 5 years. And C looks pretty cool, but when it is angry, we may have trouble. Thank you very much for your patient listening.
Thank you so much. Great dynamite review. All right, if the panel would come up here now, we do have a good 20 minutes, 15 minutes anyway, for questions, which is great. Amy, I think you had a question before. Do you want to go ahead?
Thank you. Yes, I have a question for Sharon Steele. But first, those were wonderful presentations. Thank you to all of you. I'm curious about the Vassar Hospital. You did a nice job of presenting what is a very charged situation in a pretty neutral way. I'm aware that the Bechtel Corporation is especially building a and it's never been very clear whether they were fired or whether they quit but I'm also interested in whether the First Lady, who has such an interesting
To answer your first question, I've only been on the Project Hope for a year, so I've only been on this project for a year. My understanding of the Bechtel involvement was that they took the blame for it or ended up getting the blame for it, but it really wasn't. It was more of a management problem that was actually to blame. But again, that's just hearsay to blame for the work not getting done, the costs escalating so high, and progress being stopped on the project. No, they were the architects and engineers. They were the construction end of it. USAID was managing it. And so the whole thing was stopped and maybe was going to be just dead in the water until all the people got together and said, well, let's try it again with the Corps of Engineers managing it, get a new construction contractor, and let's go forward. And that's what they've done, and that's been successful. As far as the First Lady's interest in cancer and preventive measures and other aspects, I am not aware of that. I don't know that. She very well may be, but I don't know that. Other questions for me?
Okay, I'm just going to go around the room this way. Behind Amy there. Repeat the question.
Yes, I'll repeat the question. Is Project Hope involved in any of the preventive measures for the cancer incidents in southern Iraq? Right at this point, we are not. Right at this point, we're involved in getting the hospital up and running so that that research can be done in a modern hospital to figure out what's happening. These are just probable or possible causes that have been suggested in the literature.
Okay, one over here, behind.
I have a question for Winston.
Mm-hmm.
We use a rapid detection kit that, based on certain enzymes that the coliforms had, the colonies turned a different color, and then that's how we quantified the number of coliforms per cc, 400 cc's.
The second one, just what methodology did you use to collect incidents of diarrhea over your collection period?
Sure. Basically, we just queried the households. That's definitely something we could have improved upon. A lot of papers will say diarrhea is defined by 4 loose stools in a day. My Spanish skills aren't perfect. And so we asked about diarrhea, but the consistency with which we asked about it probably wasn't perfect.
So there was no mark on a sheet every time your child has diarrhea over that 6-month period. It was more just recollection.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm going to go over to this side now, starting Steve.
I have a question for Andy. Thank you for your presentation. Mozambique and Namibia. I've got 3 questions about Mozambique or about the project. One is that I've been involved just sort of in passing, if you will, with micro-repair programs in Mozambique since about 1992, a couple of them in the center of the country in the Namibia province, and both failed.
First question, with the Mozambique and the microcredit program failing in your experiences, what we have found is that we have actually 2 different forms of economic strengthening at Project Hope. We have a microcredit loan program, which is where we give out small loans equivalent, I just know the Namibian and the Mozambican dollars, but they're very small and they are incremental. In Namibia, we have found that the microcredit loan program is very successful. In Mozambique, we're finding that the village savings loan is much more successful in Mozambique. The microcredit loan we have not had a 95 to 99% repayment rate. We've had a little bit lower than that. So we've transitioned into a village savings loan methodology where we actually just form the groups, the solidarity groups, and then they actually put in loan money, or they put in savings money, and it's more of a savings account. That has been extremely successful in Mozambique. But again, we're finding probably the same things with the microcredit, that our repayment rate is not quite as successful. Second question, remind me quickly. We have not looked at overall mortality, but that's a great suggestion to actually incorporate that into our future results. The total project budget for both actually Namibia and Mozambique was under 1 grant, and it was $8.6 million, and we just received an additional, it's $11 million, so initial 3 over the 5-year period.
Mm-hmm. Great. On this side.
Right. Yeah.
And my question is, did you observe any difference in the results in the wet season and dry season?
It's a great question. The question was whether or not we observed any differences in results during the rainy season versus the dry season. We did not actually look at that in particular. We do have data now. They've done the 1 year follow up, and so we would have that data. I just didn't have that data at the time that we presented this, but that's a great question.
Other questions? Yes.
How is the focus areas or the program areas selected in Mozambique and Namibia? As I know you did not get this, I joined Project Hope in January of 2008, and this program is all the way back to 2005. I believe that the grant was specifically targeting these areas. However, we argued for these specific areas as being very high mortality rate or high HIV/AIDS prevalence rate and a high orphan rate in those areas. But across the board, across Namibia and Mozambique, there is a high OVC number. So, but I believe the grants was specifically for those provinces or for the districts, and then we also argue our way into that as well. Sure. Okay. We do work directly with the Ministry of Health in both Namibia and Mozambique. Really, a lot of the relationship is more of on the referral basis, and that we are constantly collaborating. But it's mainly at a touch and go basis. We have to report to them and we involve them, but it's more of we're directly involved in the referral system. That's probably the most involvement we have. What's the loan? In Namibia, it's 500, so now the exchange rate is 10, so it's 50, roughly. Is that right? Yeah. $50. Anything
else? Other questions? Steve? Excellent question, and that's one we've been very concerned about. We were very lucky this last trip in September to gain the support of the minister for doing contracts for outside agencies to manage their facility. So a facility management contract, a equipment maintenance contract. Originally we had talked, and probably 6 or 8 months ago, had gained his support to provide at least the 12 top line items, the major, the MRI, the CT, the LINAC, et cetera, to have maintenance contracts for the first 5 years, that they would have to do that before we would donate that equipment. Because otherwise, your equipment is just not going to be working after the first year if you don't have anybody maintaining them. So they've agreed to do that. And as far as the budget to do that, they do have money. They've had a very hard time in Iraq spending that money. There are very difficult processes that they must go through to get approval for anything. The layers of bureaucracy are quite impressive. So, but we do have some outside contractors working with them right now to develop the contracts, to do maintenance contracts, housekeeping, food service, all sorts of contracts that they do not have the capability within the country right now to do. So with the hopes that we will be able to keep that hospital running well with the high-tech equipment and the high-tech hospital. The hospital itself has like a building management system that a lot of things are done automatically. Well, that's just fine if somebody knows how to operate it, but it's not fine if they don't. Does that answer your question? We're hopeful that, and we're putting in the contracts, we've requested to put in the contracts, a provision that part of the contract is to train the Iraqis in what they're doing. So that for the first one, two, three, however many years they need to have them do it full time, then they can start slacking off and getting less of a contract so the Iraqis can take over doing that. Train the trainer type procedure. Trying to develop their capabilities. Again.
Any last questions? Just one more question and then we will close.
I have a question for Winston. I was really interested in hearing you expand on your question.
I'll repeat it. The question is about short-term medical volunteers and their role in different countries. Is that correct?
Yeah.
In different projects. I definitely think that this model can help sort of channel energies into things that are more preventive and are, you know, on projects that sort of address the reason why people come to see you in the first place, rather than sort of covering up the symptoms of other factors. I do know a lot of my colleagues, a lot of people I went to school with, you know, embark on these types of trips, and I think a lot of it just has to do with partnering with the community, any organization can do that, I don't know if I really answered your question.
what is actually the volunteer's role in this?
Oh, okay, thank you. The question is, what is the volunteer's role in this? And the volunteer's role is actually collecting this data, coming up with working with the community to come up with these projects, talking with the health committees while we're there, and then also it's amazing what we can do in the interim between brigades. We can actually communicate with the local health committee, the chairs of the health committees, pretty easily. I think part of it is just, the volunteers can do things while they're there, but they can also do things back at home, and I think a lot of it is just helping those communities do things on their own rather than directing everything while we're there.
Thank you. I think that topic is probably worth a whole panel in itself, and maybe we'll have one for next year. I'd like to thank this fantastic panel for your 5 presentations and also the group out here for your participation.
Did you already? to know them.
I need to meet that group.
Okay.
I used to work at the University of Washington, so okay. And Dr. Mock, all of the groups and stuff.
Right.
Right. But we haven't really made that.
Right. Well, I
connection yet.
Well, let me introduce you. So, I mean, it's